I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go into the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
As Christmas nears, the Seahawks continue to frustrate and linger around, doisting with the playoff lives as the season rolls on with the final three games on the slate. This week, though, we are back to how it's always supposed to be on the Pedestrian Podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Mr. Adam Nathan, as always, and making his return from his wherever you've been. Mr. Ross Bell, how are we, guys?
Hello, mate. Yeah, life. That's where I've been. Pretty busy right now.
Yeah. So you've moved house, got a new job, and the Seahawks are the Seahawks.
Yeah, the one consistent in my life. We're consistently inconsistent.
Yeah. Adam, how are we, sir?
Yeah, I'm good. I've also been busy, but I have appeared on every podcast. But, you know, not trying to cast aspersions, just to make the point. But no, I'm very well, thank you.
Cool. Yeah, so obviously this week is going to be dominated by what happened on Sunday night, all the good, the bad, and the rather ugly. We'll start, as we always do, by listening to what Steve Rabel had to say about some of the big plays on Sunday night.
Here's the kick by Blair Walsh, and it's taken at the 1 yard line, bringing it out across the 10. 15, ball is out! Diving for the ball! Tanner McAvoy, I believe, was one of the men trying to get to the football. Seahawks say they have it. Let's see what the officials say. As the return man was hit and fumbled out across the 20-yard line, still say they have it. Where's the official? They have it. They do have it at the 25-yard line. Grant was hammered. He coughed up the ball. And just like that, the Seahawks are back in scoring position. At their own 39, McKissick out of the backfield. Russell steps up in the pocket, breaks free, looks. Now he's going to throw downfield. Got Paul Richardson, makes the catch at the 20, turns inside 15, 10, 5. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Second down and 5. Russell right back to the line of scrimmage. Throwing. He's got Lockett near side. He's got it at the 30, the 25, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Seahawks. Again, another big deep shot. And the Seahawks score. Tyler Lockett,
yeah, this. The Seahawks flew across country and returned home to Seattle with a big time owl. A few more injuries came out of it, we're going to get into later, which are going to cast a large shadow over the team heading into week 15 against the Rams. But the Seahawks lost 30-24, and it was all rather unpretty and unpleasant for the most part, wasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, it was weird, classic sort of Seahawk East Coast road game. The only thing it needed to be was a 10 o'clock kickoff, 10 a.m. kickoff, and it would have been absolute, you know, bingo, Seahawk road game bingo. It's one of those games that, you know, you're almost annoyed at them for making the comeback because it gave me 15 minutes of hope before dashing it. So I don't really know how to explain it, but a loss I was fearing but not expecting, and when it came and how it transpired, it was just pretty depressing watch.
Yeah, I think it was a point where it's like 6 minutes left in the third quarter and it was whatever the score was. I'm just like, God, there's still an hour and a bit left of this. As I said before we started recording, I just kind of didn't want to watch it. I don't really want to talk about it. But Ross, it wasn't great, was it?
No, that point you made then, when they just got their 21st point in the third quarter, and I thought, Jesus, there's still 7 minutes of this quarter left, and another quarter. This could get embarrassing, even more embarrassing. But yeah, it was, we just got out Seahawks, I think.
Yeah, but there was one thing with that, with obviously Bobby Wagner, as I mentioned, the injuries coming out of it. Bobby Wagner suffered, his hamstring flamed up or flared up or something? And KJ Wright went out with a concussion, which sounds like he's got a decent chance to play on Sunday. But Bobby Wagner, the first three plays after Bobby Wagner exited the game with his hamstring issue, the Jaguars scored 21 points and 3 touchdowns. Adam. So that kind of shows the importance with the patchwork defenses that the Seahawks have at this point, the importance of the Defensive Player of the Year of 2017, didn't it, Adam?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm not entirely convinced that his presence would have made a difference to the exact plays. You know, you've got the throw that is it Maxwell gets beaten, and you've got the long play there where KJ Wright is in coverage again, which is just so beyond frustrating now. Like, it just doesn't work. It's just, oh my God, it's so annoying. And then you've got the Fournette run after the Jadon Mickens crazy run back. Again, I'm not sure how much Wagner would have done, but you know, from a point of view of being on the actual play, but you know, the organization clearly went awry. He was sorely missed there. You know, he is the guy that calls the plays and you know, calls the protections and coverages and whatever. So sorely missed.
Yeah. Ross?
Yeah, I think now that he might not have made a difference, but if anything stands out as why he should be the defensive player of the year, it's that we look a completely different team without him there, more than anything, more than Earl, more than Sherm, anyone. He's the linchpin of that entire backfield.
Yeah, I think it's accentuated with the absence of Chancellor and Sherman behind him. But yeah, it was just a bizarre. I mean, I've never seen Keelan Carr running a 75-yard touchdown, and I've never seen Earl Thomas not be able to catch up with an offensive player, which is quite not unsettling, because it's a pretty impressive speed from the rookie wide receiver for the Jags. But it kind of emphasised everything which was going wrong, and as you say, it's still a long way to go. But on the offensive side for the Seahawks, Russell Wilson, 17 for 31, 271 yards, 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, sacked twice, added 50 more yards on the ground. But the 3 interceptions were, all on him, weren't they? Possibly the one through Jalen Ramsey open, possibly not. But it wasn't, bar the big plays in the second half, it wasn't a great day. It wasn't a banner day for someone who spent the whole week being talked up as MVP candidate, Ross.
No, his numbers look better because of the fourth quarter, but the three picks were all on him. Just trying to beat Collins one-on-one. Ramsey, one-on-one, when Doug's got no separation. It's a risk you've got to take, I think, when there's everyone else is covered, but you're playing a very risky game doing that.
Yeah, Adam?
I was pretty angry about all three picks and the decisions to throw it. I mean, it's, you know, James Vince, when he hits a cover drive for 4, it looks like a great shot. And then when he gets out, you're lamenting the same shot. And I think it's the same type of thing when you're talking about the deep ball. Yeah. We said on the podcast last week that we would win the game if we played clean. And you look at what we played against the Eagles, it was a clean, clean game. I think Wilson's only made like one real deep shot in the Eagles game, and that was to Baldwin that set up the Tyler Lockett touchdown. And I don't know what happened, but I guess the coverage that the Jacksonville had, it seemed to spook Wilson, to be honest, and he doesn't like playing against Calais Campbell, we know that for sure, and whether that was playing on his mind, but he was just taking needless shots, and, you know, punting would have been just fine. I know Bortles had a good game, but eventually he would have made a mistake, because he always has done and always will do, and punting would have been fine, and, you know, we were doing okay in the 7-8 yard pickup passes and waiting for a play to develop, and, you know, we stopped, like, bootlegging and run, you know, Wilson rolling out. It was a strain. I was pretty optimistic over the first few drives, even though they didn't yield a lot of points, that, okay, I think what could happen here is, you know, a decent plan's in place. And Wilson sort of took the team away from the plan, and I found that very frustrating.
Yeah, I think up until when he threw it behind Nick Vinette, when Nick Vinette had half of Jacksonville
threw
it into, that was the point where he kind of went, oh, that's... Like, before that, I mean, that was really early on in the game.
He should have caught that as well, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is overthrown when Wilson has time in the pocket, and Vinette is wide, wide open. It's similar to one of the throws he threw at Jimmy Graham as well, which is, again, possibly more lamentable for number 88. But yeah, it just wasn't a great day for Russell Wilson. Yet again, happening on a grass turf, which is a weird anomaly, which seems to be following him around. But despite that, he is, as we enter week 15 against the Rams, all he needs is one more touchdown pass and 18 more rushing yards this year, and Wilson will become the first quarterback in NFL history with at least 30 touchdown passes and 500 rushing yards in multiple seasons. So with all that said, after Sunday, he still probably is in conversations for, not that it matters in the grand scheme of things, I realise, for end of year awards, Adam.
He is, because of Carson Wentz's injury, which is unfortunate. But I would say that, you know, I saw an interesting tweet from a guy that I don't much care for, but he was saying that, you know, a quarterback always has to be the MVP of the league. And in a way, I agree, but you know, I find that quite a flawed argument. You know, if that's the case, then what's the point of having it, really? And for me, Antonio Brown is probably the league MVP. The way he's playing right now is just like we've never seen. And he sort of deserves it as a nod of the cap to the last 5 years he's had, which have just been absolutely incredible. And I think in a year where no one has, you know, been flawless in the quarterback position, apart from Wentz, who's now injured, I think it would be an appropriate thing for him to be given. But, you know, if Wilson drags us through the next three games, then he's got as good a chance as anyone, and rightly so.
Yeah, because, Ross, everything heading into this next game, it is nothing has changed. It is Wilson or bust for the offense. And if it wasn't for Wilson, despite what people like Andy Benoit may be trying to stoke up the flames saying, it would be even more unwatchable at times if it wasn't Wilson at quarterback. Ross?
Can you imagine if we didn't have Wilson this season?
It'd be hilarious. These would have been like, these podcasts would be like War and Peace.
Our drafting Seahawks could be really looking at the top three picks in the league next year. Because I mean, yeah, the point about Brown as well, 1,500 yards with three games to play. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's Megatron.
Yeah, that's incredible. And Bell's got over 1,000 yards on the ground as well. That's not bad. They're looking a scary team, aren't they? But yeah, it's between him and Brady now, isn't it? Probably.
Yeah, it probably is going to be a quarterback. But I think if anyone, there's obviously no running back really has done it for the full season. Kareem Hunt's done it for like 4 weeks. Kamara did it for the last month until he got his barrel run last week. There's no David Johnson type, no defensive players really getting anywhere, any conversation for the MVP, which it never really does. So yeah, it probably is going to be one of the two quarterbacks. So on the running game though, alongside Wilson, 50 yards, Mike Davis really did show some flashes and some signs of life in the running game. 15 carries, 66 yards, and one catch for minus 1 yard. And I think that's a play where he got injured on as well. I think he's dinged up his ribs. But I mean, why, Adam? Why was he on? It's just every snappy, every run he makes, makes it weird why he spent so long on the practice squad this season, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, he looked really explosive. I don't know when he got injured, but I presume it was on that set of five or six runs he had in a row that, you know, where it looked for the first time this season that the Seahawks had an actual viable run game.
Yeah. He got three first downs in a row on the ground.
I thought he was going to run all the way into the end zone. That they were just going to keep pounding him. I don't know. That was a shame that he got injured, and hopefully he can come back and play on Sunday full health. But, you know, the hamstring we had a couple of weeks ago, the ribs. You know, I would be not disgusted to go into next season with Davis, Carson, and McKissic as a trio of running backs, but you do wonder about the durability of those guys and whether that will be enough. But you know, from what you've seen from Davis, it's been really good.
Yeah, despite all that promise, it is we are probably going to enter 2018 with the same questions we entered 2017 with running back, aren't we, Ross? Durability,
yeah, definitely.
And unknowns kind of thing.
Well, yeah, the three that Adam mentioned, plus CJ Procise, if he can ever play football again, or stay fit for more than two snaps. I mean, that's an exciting foursome there. But, yeah, they can all get injured at any point.
Yeah. It's interesting position to watch as the season continues, obviously, and through the off-season. Receiver-wise, Tyler Lockett led the way with 90 yards on four catches on five targets, 74-yard touchdown, obviously. It was the first sign of Jaguars. The Jacksonville fans having a bit of gnarliness to him as he got a beer can or beer pint glass thrown at his back as he turned back up to run up the field. Doug Baldwin, 78 yards on three catches. Paul Richardson, 72 on three. Luke Wilson with one catch for 12 yards. But a lot of attention, as always, seems to be the case when he does nothing as he did on Sunday. Turn to Jimmy Graham, Ross. It's just very boring, isn't it, at this point?
It is, yeah. I sent a little tweet to Gordon. I don't know if you saw that, but Graham wasn't really pumped up enough for this game. But he probably should have caught that one, gone out to the sideline. But apart from that, he wasn't really targeted, was he?
No, yeah.
Maybe two
targets. One was the one which was thrown behind him, and the other one is what turned into an interception that Pete Carroll said he could have fought for more. But
I know he's become solely a red zone player now, but at least you can try and use him a little bit between the 20s.
Yeah, but it's one game. He's been on a chair like non-Antonio Brown receivers have been on for the last 6 weeks. He ties Antonio Brown for touchdowns in the season. He leads the league in red zone touchdowns. If we people are already talking about him in the offseason with his contract up, okay, if we're going to lose, don't want to pay Jimmy Graham $8 to $10 million, replace those touchdowns. That's pretty much what it comes down to, isn't it, Alan?
It's just so boring. I just can't be asked to talk about it anymore, to be honest. Like, it's just, it's so boring. I get enough of it with Spurs, with Sissoko and Lamella. And it's just such an agenda-living conversation these days that some people like Jimmy Graham, some people don't. If you don't, that's cool. I don't agree. If you do, great. But it's just boring now.
Okay. Yep. But Jimmy Graham does lead the league in red zone touchdowns. Paul Richardson is second on the team with 4 red zone touchdowns. And then everyone else after Richardson has 1. Baldwin, Lockett, McKissic, and I can't remember the 4th person. Might be Luke Wilson, who has the other red zone touchdowns. But it's quite worrying whether the 1 and 2 guys for the team in the red zone, which is a problem point, pressure point for the Seahawks last few years, are both hitting the market in the next few months. On the defensive side, I've already mentioned about Bobby Wagner. It was a day with Jimmy Graham went missing off the stat sheet. The defensive line went missing off the stat sheet as well, Adam. Not a single sack on one of the bottom tier quarterbacks in the league. It was bizarre.
It was ridiculous. Like, it was almost like playing uncontested scrums in rugby. Like, I don't understand what happened. Like, to make no adjustments, to seemingly get, you know, no, you know, secondary blitzes. It was just such a weird thing to watch. They were obviously trying different things, but they couldn't get anything. And you had, you know, you had Clark, you had Bennett, Sheldon Richardson, who we praised so highly on the podcast last week, and none of them could get anything going. I just don't understand what was going on. And this is, you know, the Jags were able to let go of Luke Jokel from their offensive line. So, I mean, that just shows you how many great players they've got. They can get rid of a, you know, blue-collar stud guy like Luke Jokel. So, I mean, they must, they're amazing, incredible.
It was quite frustrating. If you have any trouble getting the tongue out of your cheek there, Adam.
Jesus Christ.
Ross, pass rush.
1 quarterback hit in this game, and that was from Frank Clark. Nothing from anyone else. It was depressing. They seemed to be just running in slow motion trying to get to him. There was no kind of spark to it at all. It was just standard, yeah, let's just rush for, and let's all get blocked off and give Bortles as much time as he wants to do what he did. The few times the pocket closed on him, he threw some really odd throws that could have been picked if people were more aware of what was going on. But it was depressingly bad.
Yep.
Are there any stats out there on the Seahawks defensive line on grass? I know that often it comes up that it's the offense that is more effective, but is there anything on the defensive line when they play on grass?
Not to hand. It just seems to be a case of home and away. Like, the most obvious split for the Seahawks is on that pass rush defensive front. They just don't seem to generate anything. I mean, I think the one time this season they actually did generate stuff on the road, getting to the quarterback, was against the Giants, and that wasn't exactly a clinic. It wasn't like his 4, 5, 6, 7 sack day. It was just that they kept getting to Eli Manning and upsetting him and affecting his passing lanes and stuff. So there hasn't been a game like we had. I can't remember an example where he just got just piled up on the sack numbers. It's just been it was just the one game on the road this year where they've got to the quarterback consistently on the road. I can't think. Maybe the Eagles. I mean, I think every single defensive lineman and I think Garvin all got a quarterback hit last week, and then a week later Pete Carroll lamented yet again. I mean, the pass rush completely went AWOL. But for the Jags, I mean, someone's commented on Ross's post on Facebook about the Jags being the best, was it replacing the Seahawks as the best defense in the league. I mean, that's been the case for most of the season, hasn't it, Adam? They're the best defense in the league.
I think there's certainly an argument that, from a pieces perspective and the way they can get to the quarterback, that is certainly a case. But they made plays like in the fourth quarter where their discipline was completely gone.
Yeah.
And for me, that's not the play of a top defense. They have. If they put it together for 60 minutes, then I would say yes, they are. But they should never have allowed us back in that game. And so I'm gonna hold fire on that ever so slightly and say that, you know, on paper, I would say yes, but probably not, you know, that's not something I would fully bank on just yet.
No, but it is a case of they have all the, like I said, they have all the pieces there, don't they, Russ? With AJ Boye on Sunday had to give up a passer rating of 0.0, which is pretty damn impressive. But they're certainly on the right track down there.
Yeah, I mean, Ramsey gets the headlines, but Boye was just unstoppable. We could not get anything past him. And you had that, you got Miles Jack covering the middle of the field as well. The one weak spot, as Jalen Ramsey showed us all, was Barry Church, giving him a little head shake after he got beaten for a touchdown. But yeah, the defensive line is incredible. Dante Fowler should have had, what, 2-3 sacks that got called back. He just destroyed the right guard and right tackle.
Yeah, that was a thread through the game.
He was having a fun game with the Fetty, wasn't he?
As well, but there is a note from the Jags defense this year. Talvin Smith missing the game on Sunday against the Seahawks with a concussion is the first game a Jaguars defensive starter has missed all season. When you compare that to what the Seahawks defense has gone through for arguably the last 2 years, that is quite something. Yeah. I hope, because I've had him in fantasy, Talvin Smith is back this week as well, so it's just going to be the one game where a defensive starter misses a game for Jags, which obviously does massively help. The reaction to the game was quite calm and measured, Adam.
It was a bit of pandemonium on Facebook, but that's how we like it. I mean, yeah, I mean, people are getting a bit carried away or whatever, but I firmly believe that people are getting fired up, that shows passion and care for the team. And I'm not a moderator on the group, so it's no skin off my nose, to be honest. But I quite like seeing everyone getting fired up. I think it's cool, and I'd much rather people care than they didn't.
Yeah, I guess. It's all about the power-hungry admins on the Facebook group, I think.
I have thought that about you for a while, to be honest.
One thing that played into people's reaction to it is that the fact it was the Jacksonville Jaguars, and people maybe don't have the opportunity because they're not on Sky that much this year, even though they've been put. No. I mean, they're what, 9-10, 9-5, 9-4, whatever they are. But no one seems to realise that this 2017 Jaguars are not what they've been for the last 5-6 years, and it's kind of like by association, people expected a Seahawks rout when in reality, a 6-point game either way was way more likely, as we said on the podcast last week, Ross.
Yeah, the Jags are going to go 12-4. They've got the Texans, the Niners, and the Titans left. The Titans couldn't get past the disappointing Cardinals this week, so they're not going to put any fight up there. That's 12 wins is a fantastic season for any team, and the Jags do deserve some recognition for this. It's not the Jags of a few years ago where we blew them out by 40-odd points in the Super Bowl season. They're a good team now. We just didn't play to our full potential. I think that's the main reason for this. They outplayed us. Simple as that.
Yeah, but it,
don't fire all the coaches and trade Wilson and get rid of everyone else. They just beat us. Simple. Yeah.
Let's let Wilson go because he deserves better. I mean, anyway, association really possibly played a part in reaction, and on Twitter to a certain extent by some as well, Adam.
I don't follow, sorry.
So, like, the fact that it was the Jaguars, when you just kind of have, like, a feeling around a team name rather than what the team's actually doing in the season, you kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've got even bloody Michael Bennett, they dug up a video from March by saying that every game in the NFL is close unless you're playing the Jaguars and you win by 50.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's their own bloody players doing it. Look, fair play to the Jaguars. I don't see them having that deep a run in the playoffs, because I just don't think that they're going to be a rounded enough team to beat a Chargers, a Steelers, or a Patriots. But it's great, and it's fun to watch them fly around on defense, and they've got some cool young players. And I'm happy we don't have to see them for another 4 years, to be honest.
Yep, and obviously all on top of that is a run game matches up with the defense for the Jags, with Leonard Fournette having 101 yards and a touchdown on 24 carries. Is there anyone to praise on the side of the ball, chaps?
On either side of the ball.
I mean, Quinton Jefferson showed some pretty impressive jumping skills. He's a better climber than me, but I mean, what were your opinions on that, Ross? For me, Michael Bennett was going for the ball. You can quite clearly see the stuff after is borderline. If maybe. If
Richardson throws a punch, then he is fair enough.
Well, I don't think I've seen Richardson's stuff, but the Bennett stuff and then the Jefferson stuff, it's kind of, it seems to be the straw that's broke the camel's back kind of thing, and Pete Carroll's, this finally seems to be to turn the place to stop doing it. But it wasn't pleasant. It was just lengthening the agony, wasn't it, on Sunday, Russ?
Yeah, I was just thinking, just let them kneel this game out and we can get away with this and move on. But the Jefferson thing, I didn't have... It's obviously a really bad look for the team and a bad look for the player and all this sort of stuff. But if someone's going to throw a bottle at you, and then either was it a bottle or a banana, it was reported,
I think it was a bottle.
I mean, that could do some damage, though. You've got no helmet on. You get hit with a bottle in the head, that's going to hurt. And you're going to be pissed anyway because of what's just happened on the field. So... Yeah. Kind of man up to it. If you're going to throw stuff, then face up to him, but don't run away and hide.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the Jefferson stuff, yeah, like you say, he said that he was getting comments about his mother and his family and stuff, which is just, it kind of comes with going on the road in the NFL, but still.
Yeah, comments you should be able to brush off. You're a professional sportsman.
There was also a tweet from Rod Maher, who's the team photographer, saying that he was getting... racial abuse all game as well. Is of Asian descent, I believe. Add on the end of game ish nonsense.
I'm going to be honest and say that I thought the team were disappointing, bordering on disgraceful, more on the field than off the field. I know you can say that Bennett's swiping for the ball, but I'm sorry, you're not going to get it. And there's a reason, unfortunately, that Seahawks have a reputation for being bad losers, and it's nonsense like this. You can give me the always compete stuff, and you know, I'm fully agree with that, but swiping the ball is just a silly thing. And I was listening to Michael Duggar's podcast today, and he rightly said, you know, if a team's in victory position, victory formation, there's a reason for it, and you have to just have to take the L and walk off the field. You've got 59 of the minutes to win the game, and if they're in victory formation, you have to take the loss on the chin. You know, show a bit of grace. And unfortunately, you do stuff like that and it riles people up, and it's all fine to be pissed off. I sort of get it, you know, in the last play of the Super Bowl when your season crumbles in front of you when you think you're going to win. But at a time like that, I think you have to be the bigger man just play by the rules that, you know, the unwritten rules of the game. If they're in real information, just take the loss and walk off the field, because it unfortunately brings up narratives that people have about the Seahawks and about Pete Carroll that in the long run make the whole thing just not worth it at all.
Yeah, and it brought up people bringing up leadership and stuff, questions around Pete Carroll, which if you watch how he dealt with it yesterday and on Monday, he's clearly at the forefront of everything. He's clearly got some remnants of control. I think there's also been an article about how the players... The Seahawks are the social warriors, the social justice warriors, whatever they were called. That happens because of how Pete Carroll runs the ship, as it in Seattle. So it's kind of he said that it's not a coached thing, but it's something they've been told has worked in the past. It just never has, and now they're going to stop doing it. So yeah, it was rather unpleasant. Adam, you didn't want to talk about something which was boring, which is the Jimmy Graham thing earlier. Blair Walsh.
He wants to finish early. Don't bring this up.
Oh yeah, Blair Walsh.
Oh my fucking god.
Sorry.
Right. No, Blair Walsh. Right. It's not his fault that he's shit. It's absolutely not his fault. I don't blame him. I don't like him, but I don't blame him for being atrocious at his job. It is now entirely the fault of the front office, and it is embarrassing and just infuriating that he's still on the team. As much as the miss from 38 yards is pathetic, the thing that annoys me more is that you can't trust a guy to kick from 55 yards on the road. And you know, in a game like that, you need your kicker. It's a crucial part of the game. 3 points is massive. And if you don't have a kicker that you can trust to kick from 55, which I would say is, you know, the start of a long field goal in the modern NFL.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you in the league for? And so, you know, I don't blame Blair Walsh for being shit. That's, you know, that's unfortunately his career was ruined against Seattle. As I said, you know, from the minute I think he signed, I was very, very skeptical about whether it was going to work out. And the fact he lasted past the Redskin game is bordering on insulting to the fans, if you ask me.
Yeah, and Pete Carroll says yesterday on Blair Walsh, he's a good kicker, great leg, terrific mechanics. He's missed a couple here and there, but he's doing things right to give us a chance. He's our guy, hoping he comes through. Yeah, the miss is just ridiculous. Everything was fine. The guys on Fox commentary who didn't shower themselves in glory at some points during the game just highlighted how everything was fine. The snap, the laces out and all that stuff. And yeah. He just flat out missed it. And the fact that he misses it after he, as Adam says, they don't even try him out there for 55-yard field goal. It's a six-point game. There's 6 points. But even one of them, if one of them goes in, that completely changes how the Seahawks attack it at the end of the last drive, which ended with another controversial call with defenders only seem to be able to tackle Paul Richardson by his helmet. but yeah, Blair Walsh is the kicker till further notice, it appears. Ross.
Yeah, Adam, I think you made the point on Facebook that he's cost us 3 wins this season. He is in games we've lost, he's 7 of 12 for field goals. In wins, he's 13 of 15. That's kind of irrefutable evidence there.
Not many big kicks in those wins.
Not many
go ahead kicks 50. And stuff like that.
No, I don't think really.
He's attempted 1 over 50 this year and he missed it. Yeah. That's he's 50% almost from in games we lose. That's not good enough.
Yep, most definitely is. So yeah, the Seahawks playoff future hangs in the balance. But thanks to Carson Wentz and ended up being Nick Foles. With the just absolutely massive blow over the injury to Carson Wentz. It does suck quite a lot for a team, as Adam said, have been pretty flawless on the offensive side of the ball, all sides of the ball this year. But yet they outlasted the Rams in LA, which means this Sunday's game against the Rams at CenturyLink Field is effectively for the NFC West if things go to plan. So let's talk about that one.
Wilson throwing, end zone caught! Jimmy Graham for the Seattle touchdown! Rookie really playing the most in his first game of the season. Jimmy Graham, 6'7", big body against a 6-foot receiver who backs up, does not get in between him and the football, and Russell puts it right there on that back.
Yep, week 15 in the NFL, the Seahawks return back to CenturyLink Field for their penultimate home game of the season against the Los Angeles Rams, possibly the surprise team in the 2017 NFL season. It is for all the cheese, isn't it though, Adam, on Sunday?
It's certainly for having the cheese board delivered to your table. Whether you can find a way to get the cheese on the cracker with the chutney into your mouth by beating Dallas and Arizona, that's up to you. But it's certainly, in the word of the soup Nazi in Seinfeld, it's no soup for you if you don't win this game.
that was all like, it's 3 different food groups referencing that a bit. Russ, it's quite a big game if you take the last 2, which obviously we're not going to. If you take the last 2 games as a gimme, for just playoff chances percentage swings, it's the biggest game of the weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it's massive. We're on a 2-game win streak against the Rams, so that's something I've not thought would see for ever in the way we used to play them. But it's pretty important. We've already beaten them once. This would kind of secure the division, I think, with the in-division record if we ended the same. It's pretty big, but then at the end of the day, I was thinking this the other day, wouldn't 8-8 record be the worst thing for this team this season?
Yes.
Yes.
Obviously, we don't make the playoffs, but wouldn't some things change that we want to change, possibly?
Do we want to do this now, or do we want to talk about the Rams getting retrieved at the end?
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, yeah.
I want to watch the Seattle play in January.
So. Oh, yeah, obviously, yeah. I'd rather see us in the playoffs, but...
I just feel like if you're out of the dance, it's harder to get back into it, and... I'm not necessarily convinced that like a tumultuous off season of stuff blowing up and why they didn't make the playoffs. And, you know, it's annoying enough when we're good, let alone when we're bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not even like we've got a raft of draft picks that being high up in every round is going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the biggest regular season games of the Russell Wilson era, if not the biggest.
I think it could easily be the biggest one since we had that play-in Rams game, and that was when we were, what, 6-9 or wherever we were. And it was Charlie Whitehurst throwing passes to Ruvan Martin. And then the week after we had, obviously, Beastquake. It's massive. If you think, there's a lot of talk about the power teams in the NFL, and obviously it's the Seahawks and the Patriots and Steelers. Yeah. And the Packers always seem to be in that conversation last 3-4 years. And the thing that the other three teams have in common is when everything's healthy and firing, those teams make the playoffs. And it doesn't matter how deep they go, they're always one of the final 12 teams, and you have to be that to stay. Just keep that, not so much momentum, but keep that rolling. So you need to be in the dance, as Adam says, to do that. I mean, it's something, I think, the only season the Patriots have missed the playoffs, I think they missed the playoffs, is the year where Tom Brady only played like 2 snaps. I mean, when Aaron Rodgers has played 16 games, I don't think the Packers have missed the playoffs, and the Steelers the same with Roethlisberger when he plays 16 games. It's that.
Yeah.
If your franchise guy, as is obviously clearly Russell Wilson, plays 16 games, and he is supposed to be one of the best players in the league, you should be making the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I asked the question. Thing.
Yeah, obviously the Seahawks are going for a 5-0 NFC West record on Sunday. They did outlast and beat the Rams in Los Angeles at the start of October, 16-10, where Jared Goff and the Rams offense looked a lot like the 2016 offense at times, turning the ball over 5 times. It's going to be a similar thing needed on Sunday, though, with just getting the ball on short fields for the offense, isn't it? That's going to play a massive part on Sunday, Russ.
Yeah, it is, definitely. We need to put ourselves in positions that we can win this and not kill ourselves with stupid penalties and things like that. My narrative of the Rams only being able to beat poor teams and not being able to put up any points against a good team has blown to smithereens last week against the Eagles, so I'm clinging on to this one with the merest of fingernails at the minute, because they put up 35 points on that Philly D, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is, but also I think 14 of them came off a pick six and a fumble recovery in like the 10. So when they actually had to go a long way down the field, they weren't the offense that they've shown at times against the weaker teams in the league, yeah. Adam. But this is, get the turnovers, repeat what they did in the Coliseum in LA, and it should set the team in good footing, shouldn't it, on Sunday, Adam?
Yeah, winning the turnover battle would be one way to go about getting this done in what is going to be a tricky game, as much as I hate to say it. But this is going to be a bit of a bitch, especially if Wagner's not there.
Yeah,
I think Wagner could be the difference in a win or a loss, to be honest.
Yeah.
The Seahawks will love the challenge. I mean, it came out a couple of weeks ago that every time the Rams get to the line of scrimmage before the 15-second cutoff, when the coach isn't allowed to talk to the quarterback anymore, it's actually Sean McVay basically calling an audible based on the defensive protection he sees. So it'll be interesting to see whether the Seahawks sort of fart around a bit and wait until the last minute and then change protection again after the 15 seconds of the play clock is out. It could be quite interesting to see how that goes. And it's certainly a battle that someone like Carroll will relish. And after his sort of real swan song of a coaching performance against Philadelphia, I really hope he can get another one done here, because getting blitzed by a young coach is not going to be a good look for him after last week.
No, especially if we lose it. The first 3 out of 4 losses at home, wasn't it, as well? Obviously, apart from the Eagles game, lost to the Falcons and Redskins. But yeah, the last game in LA was up. Quickly going back on the kicker thing, Blair Walsh did actually make 3 field goals in that game, so he is actually the one game where he won us one. So he had 1-14 this season. So it's not too bad. But yeah, we're getting to Goff is going to be a massive thing, because this they're an offense which it appears that Robert Woods is back. Andrew Whitworth exited the game on Sunday, but he appears ready to go. Here's going to be a thing where they're going to find inventive ways to attack a defense which, as Adam said, could be without the big part in the middle, Russ.
Yeah, I know it's a risky strategy to send blitzes at Goff when they've got so many receivers that can do things after the catch, but we've got to get some pressure on him this week and just ruffle him. The noise is going to be there. They just need to send the defenders in his face as well.
Yeah. Adam?
100%. You know, certainly getting he's not the most mobile of guys, so getting pressure up the middle and collapsing the pocket from the inside is going to be absolutely crucial and probably the difference from whether we can win this or not, because if we allow him 3-4 seconds in the pocket, they will eventually scheme someone open because McVay is a genius.
It's all crossings and just different ways of lining players up. Him and Shanahan are really changing things. I mean, Shanahan, there's a pretty cool piece earlier in the week about Kyle Shanahan, how he calls plays with the play three plays down the line already in his mind and already ready to go. It is really impressive what him and Shanahan are doing. And also quite annoying that they're both in the NFC West. On the offensive side of the ball is... We talk about winning the turnover, but all that helps if the quarterback doesn't make the same mistakes he made last week, Adam.
Yeah, Wilson, again, is going to have to play clean, but he's in a bitch of a position, Wilson, because he's got the team to carry basically completely by himself and also try and be conservative and look after the ball. It's very difficult, but, basically what the deal needs to be, that he needs to say to the defense, I'll bail you all out, but if I get done in, you've got to bail me out once. I mean, they've got to work completely together on that. But I think this time last year, we all saw a defeat to Atlanta on the horizon. It was coming. We all knew that in 5 weeks' time, we were going to lose in the playoffs. That was basically a guarantee. This year, I kind of feel that we might be rubbish and we might get blasted by someone, but I'm not going to guarantee that we can't do it. And, it's sort of the Jim Carrey, so you're saying there's a chance, overused bit. You know, there is a chance this year, and that's what's given me a little bit of hope. And Sunday's going to crystallise the whole thing.
That just shows development and trust in the offensive, though, doesn't it? Because last year we weren't really sure. Wilson was basically playing on no ankles last year. So him healthy, him firing as he is, with obviously... even with the mistakes he made on Sunday, the fact that he's doing what he's doing when he's asked to do as much as he is, it kind of, that's behind, there is, as you said, you get into the dance, there's a lot less doom waiting for you, Russ.
Yeah, definitely. In a one-off game, I'd back us to beat pretty much any other team in the league this season, because we come up big in big games normally. This game is massive. We need to win this game.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a torturous few hours on Sunday, isn't it, Adam?
Horrendous. I was so excited on Baldwin's touchdown. I literally did a lap around my flat, running around like a maniac. I think Rosie described me as a constipated baby getting very excited. just charging around. It was so thrilling. Like when you get a big play on special teams like that, and then you follow it up straight away with a Stuart Court style touchdown call. it's just so fun to watch. And then obviously 15 seconds later, I've gone to myself a celebratory whiskey for the touchdown. All of a sudden, it's streaking out the other end of the pissing touchdown. it's going to be stressful. This could be even me a night where I put a jersey on in my own flat, which is terribly painfully weird, but I think I'm going to have to do that.
I think I might have to change up the comment what jersey I want to say, but it will be changing this Sunday. On outside of Mr. Wilson, the run game is going to play a big part, and obviously another big part of that run game is running away from number 99, Adam.
just keep the ball away from him. against Clowney, for some reason, they kept going to him as if to make a point. Don't be dumb. keep the ball away from the good person. In the same way as when you're on defense, you want to try and keep the ball away from their good attacking players. Do the same the other way around. don't send Mike Davis or J.D. McKissic on an inside run into Aaron Donald. That would be sensationally dumb. Yeah. Just keep it away from them.
Yeah, there's a lot of eyes, a lot of pressure will be on the rookie Ethan Posic, which he's going to probably most regularly line up against Aaron Donald. It's something they didn't do in LA, but it's something they've got to do this week, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, definitely. If Mike Davis is fit, that's a good plus for us. If Rawls is anywhere near the field, that's a good thing as well. And McKissic, we can get him on tosses and sweeps. That's good as well. We need to just keep away from that middle of the defensive line, basically.
I mean, they could be two cornerbacks down, which could make a big difference.
Webster's out, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I think Trumaine Johnson may miss it, may miss the game.
I think he definitely missed practice yesterday, I think. I mean, is there anything that can... is it just win on Sunday that's going to calm down people and keep people quiet for an extra week? Or is there something else that you're going to want to see on Sunday, Ross?
Win. I don't care if this is 9-6 to the Seahawks. I just want to win. They're getting a bit too big for their boots.
I was going to say 2-0.
I'll take a 2-0.
So there's no like 150-yard game from Mike Davis, two touchdowns from Jimmy Graham, or a touchdown from Nick Vinette. It's just a case of adding a W to the wing, to the left-hand side column, Adam.
Yeah.
100%. We can digest all that nonsense after the game. The only thing I'm thinking about on Sunday is that our number is more than their number, and I'm talking about points, not penalties for the first time.
Yeah, it also seems on that penalty point, we forgot to mention it with the Jag stuff, that Jermaine Ifedi is close to being benched. If not this season, the next 3 weeks, 3-6 weeks, he's definitely going to be competing for his job next year, isn't he, Adam?
Do you know what it is? Like, you know when something on social media happens with Trump, and everyone's like, oh, that's it. He's done himself in now. Yeah, this is going to be it.
Nothing happens.
And then nothing happens. And every game, especially every loss, I'm like, well, if Fetty's done himself in now, he's never coming back. And next week, out trots number 65, which is still a ridiculous number for a right tackle. And is, for me, the main reason for his downfall has been the change of number. And certainly such an irresponsible number like 65. And I'm going to keep banging on about that until someone picks up on it.
Because 65, I actually went back and looked because I'm quite sad. 65 was Patrick Lewis's number, and he was a centre.
It's just such a rubbish. It's a number that suggests no confidence.
Yeah, you have whatever's left.
Was it Andy from Little Britain? Want that one? He fought into it. Just wanted that one.
I'd also argue sort of Blair Walsh having such a quarterback's number in 7. That doesn't sit well with me. But you know, that's for another time.
That's for a Patreon only episode, I think. Play a numbers game. On the defensive side, there is a legitimate reason to predict this game with Bobby Wagner and without Bobby Wagner, isn't it? And obviously, confidence levels will line up alongside that as well, won't it, Adam?
100%. For me, honestly, I'm win with Wagner, lose without him.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree, Russ.
Oh, yeah, because I think you tweeted out the starting linebackers for the Seahawks after Wagner and Blight went out last week. That was depressing, wasn't it?
It was suboptimal.
Yeah. I mean, the team I've made a move to sign Paul Dawson, who was someone who...
Michael Dawson.
Paul Dawson, who had... possibly, he's taller than Paul Dawson.
He's good in the air.
Who was a very good tackler at TCU, despite being very small and apparently having the focus of a goldfish. And he was a third round pick for the Bengals and I think he made 3 tackles in 2 years for the Bengals, which is
good.
Possibly just because Marvin Lewis isn't a complete idiot. So he has been signed, but Michael Wilhoit, who was allowed to walk away from the 49ers, DJ Alexander, who we traded for from the middle linebacker devoid Kansas City Chiefs, and Terrence Garvin, who was allowed to walk from the linebacker bereft Redskins, doesn't exactly breed confidence without both KJ, who has had his struggles. If he is there, it just kind of cushion the blow. But he, as I said to Adam a couple of days ago, he can't do the job he was asked to do when he was in. He doesn't appear to be able to do the job he could have done when he played in Wagner's place a couple of years ago, which was seen throughout 2017 season. But one to watch on defense, Adam.
Oh, blimey. Byron Maxwell has to be a little bit better than he was on Sunday.
I've gone off the page, but I'm pretty certain Byron Maxwell was the leading tackler for the Seahawks on Sunday, which suggests that they did quite heavily target him. Ross?
Bradley McDougald, for me. It's a big game for him. He's been playing very well to get himself a contract, I think, as well. But he's taken that Cam role and kind of made it his own. He misses some of the tackles that Cam might have made, but he's a big hitter, and that's going to rough up some of the Cooper Kupp and the like.
Yeah, Cooper Kupp could be the difference on Sunday. But McDougal doesn't have the physical presence that Chancellor has, but he is showing he's got game. Score prediction, Russ, on Sunday?
Oh, let's go slightly more adventurous than 6-9. Let's go 15-10. Seahawks.
1 point difference from the first game. Adam?
Oh, my God. I think it's going to be a shootout. I'm going 30-24 Seattle, assuming Wagner plays.
Yeah, I don't see there's any way. Even if Wagner plays, I'm not completely certain that the defense without Sherman and Chancellor can quite keep the Browns' offense quite. This could be another Falcons type score. I think it's going to be something like 33-27, 28, something like that. I really do think, I don't see this being a low scoring game, even if just because they're going to make the most of no Sherman and no Chancellor in the middle of that field. Even if Wagner plays, they just have, as Adam said, McVay is a genius. But yeah, hopefully,
you know, by conventional wisdom, 33 points means that Blair Walsh makes 7 successful kicks.
But
I just wanted to flag that.
How have we scored 30 points in any game this season, then? isn't it the Steelers who have, Mike Tomlin always goes 2-pointers? Maybe we should just...
Start doing that.
Or just get, 15 off... two holding calls on a Fedi on two separate conversions, then we can go for it and just throw a bomb down the bucket.
Do you know what my favourite thing was? That the special teams play that we made, we only made it because Blair Walsh wasn't strong enough to kick it out the back of the end zone.
Popped up well short.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That was the first time we've seen Tedrick Thompson. He gets a weird amount of flack on Seahawks Twitter from certain people. He was the one who recovered that fumble. But yeah, hopefully the Seahawks come out of Sunday with a win, with their playoff chances up around 70%, I think I read earlier this week. If they lose 583, is that the website with all the math stuff?
Sounds familiar.
They project that the Seahawks playoff chances with a loss on Sunday will be 3%. So it's quite a big swing on Sunday. Moving on quickly, quick lock or shock for week 15, are we?
15.
Russ, lock or shock?
Lock is Saints to beat the Jets. No, Josh McCown for the Jets. So that's over already.
Yep. Adam?
Yeah, I will go with that as a fairly safe lock.
You were so close to your shock last
week. I will go for the Falcons beat the Buccaneers as my lock of the week.
Yeah, I'll go Vikings to beat the Bengals because that offense is a joke in Cincinnati. shock of the week, Adam?
Shock of the week. Hope it doesn't happen, but I will say that the 49ers will beat the Titans.
Yeah, because Mariota's hobbled, if not injured, which is just the complete wasting that quarterback there. I'm going to go with the bloody hell. I'm going to go. I think the 49ers will beat the Titans. That's mine as well, Russ.
The Bears to beat the Lions. The Lions have got a winning record somehow, but I'm not really sure how this year.
Yeah, I mean, they don't seem to have a running back, although they just seem to swap every snap of the play, which is really annoying when you've had Amir Abdullah in your fantasy league. So talking of fantasy, it's in our fantasy league, I mean, Adam are in, it's me against Adam in our semi-final.
Surely locking up the army, you pisses around the world.
Yeah, the sub-500 Adam's army is in the playoffs, which is very annoying.
There have never been, nor will there ever be, pictures in the scorebook, Stuart.
Moving on, we're going to do it again quickly. Who are you going to put this week, Adam, in the proverbial bin?
Well, I was going to say, Marcus Mariota is struggling to walk, A, because of his hamstring injury, and B, because he spent the last week in my bin. Get in the proverbial bin, Marcus Mariota. And also, Derek Carr, you can get in there and join him. And you can get in there as well, Jameis. All of you young quarterbacks coming out thinking you're it. You've not got it. Get in the bin, the lot of you.
It's like the most fired up part of this whole podcast from Adam. Russ?
I love it.
Well, Adam put young quarterbacks in there. I'm putting Tom Brady in there and his fantasy football playoff sabotage he's been doing since 2007. Only twice since then has he thrown more than 2 touchdowns in a game from week 14 onwards.
That's a stat. That is.
That's amazing. Good stuff.
That is amazing stuff.
They always they all said you did no research for this show, Ross, but I'm impressed. You can obviously do a little bit.
Yeah, for me, I've quickly mentioned him earlier. Marvin Lewis needs to get in the bin. He's the team spends a top 10 pick on a wide receiver who's got speed that the league doesn't have, even with Tyreek Hill existing. He gives him one snap in the second, third week of the season. He fumbles it, and he's never seen again. And then when he gets injured, or hides, according to Marvin Lewis, hides an injury, he doesn't protect his player like we see from Pete Carroll and all the decent, good coaches in the NFL. He completely throws them under the bus. Yeah, and then they get blown out at home by Mitchell Trubisky and his name of Chicago Bear receiver.
And they Kendall Wright.
Is he there, is he?
A classic Nathan fantasy sleeper.
Yeah, he's just getting the bin, Marvin. There's also a second one for me is Major League Baseball. You could right. not. I mean, I know there've been injury issues this week since he passed his physical for the Los Angeles Angels. But could they not allow the Seattle Mariners fans to have a couple of years of fun? Shohei Ohtani is a player who plays pitch and he bats, and he apparently is completely changing the fantasy game in baseball, as there are going to be two Shohei Ohtanis on the things. You can actually be a trade of Ohtani for Ohtani in 2018 Major League Baseball fantasy, which is awesome. And he goes to the Angels. He said for months that he wanted to go to a small market team, and he goes to Los Angeles. I mean, come on, get him in. And also, I'm on a roll now. Derek Jeter, get in the bin. You play for the New York Yankees for 30,000 years. You then buy another team which have not too far away from playoffs, really. And you trade, who if they played on any other team and they've been the league's MVP, to the Yankees for basically nothing. It is like, I can't even think of a comparison. It's Newcastle giving up on Alan Shearer and getting Federico Macheda in return. It's absolute nonsense. Major League Baseball needs to get in the bin, anyway.
Can I just place Marshall Faulk, Keith Evans and Mike Taylor just on the edge of that bin, because they're currently under investigation for things.
Sounds like they need more than a bin.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. I need some, yeah.
Yeah.
All alleged, we must say, obviously.
Yes.
Yes, all alleged, but yeah, it does not read well. Any questions, Ross? You did post to the Facebook group earlier.
Just let me bring them up. My Facebook page stopped loading. What's the easiest path through the playoffs as the 4 seed, and who doesn't scare us? That's from John Maxfield. Does anyone scare us in the AFC?
I don't know. I don't really want to go to New Orleans or Minnesota.
No, but then Case Keenum.
Yeah, but he's, yeah. the NFC playoffs are going to have Case Keenum, Nick Foles, and Jared Goff, who are the last three quarterbacks Jeff Fisher failed to do anything with. Which is just, if he gets a job anywhere else, just show him the 2017 NFC playoffs and just say, no, you're not getting this job. I don't really want to go. I'd rather go on the road to Minnesota than New Orleans and Philadelphia. Probably, yeah, but yeah, just no part of New Orleans in January.
That's
agreed.
And then a question from Ben Moorheim. Who's kind of next in line for the contract now after this week's games? Because they seem to be rotating between Jimmy and Sheldon and everyone else. Who's currently the top of that list?
I mean, I may have said it on last week's podcast. I don't see either Richardson getting a new contract in Seattle.
No. I think Paul might want too much. Possibly, yeah. Or his Paul, market value will be too high.
I think Paul Richardson's probably going to be this year's Golden Tate. That's probably without
shame.
Adam?
Well, I think I said to you on Sunday night on WhatsApp that if there's a choice between Luke Jokel and Paul Richardson, which I think could probably get similar money, then it's an absolute no-brainer for me. Give me Paul Richardson every day of every week, every year. The money will be there to pay Richardson, I think, if they want it enough. But it just depends on, I can't imagine he's going to go and get more than $8 million. But if that is his market, then I would say that's a pretty fair price. And, we have to spend money on the offense at some point, because that's the way the league's going. You can't just win with the dominant defense now. You have to be able to put the points on the board at the other end as well.
Yeah, and it is with Richardson, it is someone I think Adam can attest to. I banged a drum for through every...
Bloody, I nearly did my eardrums in finger, so bloody hard.
Every fingernail break he had the first few years of his time in Seattle. So it would be disappointing. I think if you look at Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones when they left Cincinnati, was it 2 years ago, both of them left?
Yeah.
If you look at their deals they got from Atlanta and Detroit, that's probably going to be the baseline for what Richardson's going to test. Because especially Marvin Jones, he's basically the same player. Marvin Jones is just a bit more physical of a threat. I think, is that fair, Marvin Jones comparison, Adam?
Yeah, I think that is a good one. But then Jones hasn't quite got that breakaway speed that returns. Funny you should say that, because I've just read an article that Richard Sherman's put up on the Players Tribune as we were doing the pod of his five most underrated receivers in the NFL. I mean, we'll part the fact that Jermaine Curse is number one in that. maybe.
I hadn't read it, but I saw it posted earlier, and the only reason I saw it was because Jermaine Curse has retweeted it. I was like, you've retweeted that.
We'll put that one down to the painkillers that he must be taking. but Marvin Jones features in the list, so it's quite an interesting one to have him on there.
Yeah, I think just every time I seem to see a highlight of the Lions this season, when there's a deep pass, it is ends up being Marvin Jones who's on the end of it. I mean, Kenny Galladay had a couple of weeks earlier in the season where he was the guy, but the last few weeks he seems to be the main deep threat for the Lions. It just seems to.
And I mean, he went almost undrafted in most fantasy leagues this year. I mean, certainly not a top 10, not in the top 10 rounds.
No. I just don't see Sean Rich. I don't see any way. Definitely both of them won't stay. I think both Richardsons will stay. I think, Bradley, I think you pay mention to it, Russ. I think McDougal's doing himself a world of good, especially how there seems to be questions, or not so much questions, just waiting for the hammer to fall on Cam Chancellor's NFL career. Mm. I think that's going to help him a lot, but also that could also at the same time drive his price up quite a lot if he has a good next month or so. What do you think, Russ?
I'm thinking Dwayne Brown needs to be the first one on this list of all of the guys to pay.
No, he's
or get redone basically.
Yeah, the thing with Dwayne Brown is that they're probably going to there's ways that they can extend him, but just for the fact they can create more cap room.
Yeah.
Because of how his contract's slanted, but that's just
looking. His cap is currently $9.75 million for next year.
Yeah, they can't continue.
Wouldn't stun me to see a Wilson contract restructure.
Yeah.
No, same here. He did it earlier in the season, didn't he, as well?
Did he definitely? Did we know that?
Well, I think he changed, did a Brady and changed how he got paid, basically. So it opened up a bit of space. I'm sure he did when we traded for Brown.
I'm not sure that ever came out. I know, because I know Baldwin did for Richardson, but I'm not sure that it was ever said, but oh well.
Any other questions, Ross?
They're the best two, basically. We'll just see those two. Everything else we've pretty much covered already.
Okay, cool. Sid, where can people get hold of us and all the Patreon stuff as well? We still need to have Matty on at some point as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, hang on, let me remember all this stuff then. You can get us on Patreon, patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast, where you can back us at various different levels, as Matty War has done for the 12th Man Fan Jam show. They're the show sponsors. They're giving us a lovely little bit of money every month, which goes straight towards charity. You can get us on Twitter, SeaEquals UK. On Facebook, at the UKC, of course, Seattle Seahawks group, and is that it? Podbean?
Yeah, Podbean, and then obviously...
It's been a while since I've done this.
Twitter, at Seahawks UK, at Stuart_Court, at Adam D. Nathan, at RossBy1984. Facebook group is UK Seattle Seahawks fans. If you can get past all the admins on that group, you're more than welcome. Yeah, and obviously we will be back next week. I believe we're going to be joined by a guest, Adam, next week, which you have managed to sort out.
Yes, Ned, our friend Michael Duger from the Seattle PI, who was a really great guest earlier in the year, and look forward to having him back on.
Superb game day tweeter as well.
Yeah, top three for sure.
Also a superb Star Wars nonsense tweeter as well. I mean, his tweet about Star Wars is amazing.
Yeah, they're my favourite tweets I've seen for ages.
Yeah. Although I think, Adam, your Twitter must have been quite hot, seeing as you got name dropped by Mr. Marlowe as well.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
There is also one more person I want quickly before we go home, put in the bin on this week's podcast. Herm Edwards, who was a former Jets, I think he was a Chiefs head coach, has been on ESPN for eight, nine, maybe 10 years. He's been out of the game. He was appointed the head coach at Arizona State, and he had this quote when someone wanted to ask the question from the Devil's Digest, which is obviously the college paper or something. The Devil's Digest, Herb Edwards asks, "I'm a Catholic now, I'm Christian. Watch out for them Devils. We're good, though. I ain't taking it personal." The Arizona State nickname is the Sun Devils, and he's got with Devils. So good luck with that, Arizona State. Yeah, until next time on the Pedestrian Podcast, enjoy the game on Sunday, if that is possible, and...
Go Hawks.
Code Rubino, Devil's Digest.
Digest, huh?
Yes, sir.
Where are you located, my man?
Right here in Tempe.
Okay, Devil's Digest, okay. I'm Catholic now, I'm a Christian. Watch out them Devils. Just saying.
Well, you can see,
we're good, brother.
You can see Devils all over the place.
I ain't taking it personally.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.